What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Ballbenders, your one-stop place for all the hottest football talk, bent like David Beckham and delivered straight to your doorstep. My name is Mubarak, and I am joined by my very good friend, Basil Al-Hassani. And together, we've been in this conversation with ex-Premier League baller, Super Sam Soje. How are you doing, my bro?
I'm good, man. How are you guys?
We're good. We're happy to have you back again.
Thank you very much. My pleasure. My pleasure.
How's it going in London, man?
We've had a very good day, a very good couple of days in London, very hot, so we've been enjoying the good weather.
All right, before we get on with it, I just want to pause and send love to all our Muslim listeners tuning in from around the world. Eid Mubarak from all of us at Ballbenders. Bas, I think it's high time you said something in Arabic to our Muslim listeners.
Okay, in Arabic you would say Eid Mubarak li jami' al muslimin. So
say that again.
Eid Mubarak. Eid Mubarak. So it's kind of similar to what you just said. It's not different.
And what does it mean?
A blessed Eid.
Good.
Yeah. Arabic thing told me that I look like Yusuf, look like Hamza.
Habibi, please. Ana akid. Intewana akhla. Big love and cheers everyone who tuned into the first part of this interview. You lot are absolute legends, man. We are back like we never left to finish what we started. Brentford played their last game at Griffin Park. They're moving to a new home. Quite emotional scenes out there. Sam, talk to us about your most memorable moment playing on the ground.
Oh, lovely ground. You know, Brentford is like a baby to me. They gave me a chance to play in the league. So I hope Brentford really tied to my chest because it's a wonderful football club. It's a family football club. And I just hope good things happen to them because, you know, Griffin Park was like a little playground where it's like a community and where the supporters were really good to us, you know. And I had really good couple of years there, went to the playoff twice, you know, got player of the season twice in the bounce, got into the team of the year. So it's a good place for me. And I had a big move from Brentford to a Premier League club. So Brentford is really great to me. And I hope we see them in the Premier League. I'm going to be there when they open the new stadium. So hopefully we'll be watching Premier League football in the new stadium.
Are you going to attend the playoff final game?
I don't think we're allowed to go. If we're allowed, you know, I definitely want to go and support them. But if I don't go, I'll be at home. But definitely they know how I feel about them. Hopefully they can make it.
I'm cheering for Brentford just for you, my Sam.
Thank you very much.
And I hope they make it to the Premier League.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, talk us about your time at Brentford. And who was your favorite teammate back then?
No, I always say my right hand man, Michael Turner, was my favorite teammate. But you know, it was we went through stuff together. We played every game together, every game, and we made a very good partnership. And it was the best in the league at the time. And when we both went on to play in the Premier League, so Michael Turner was up there with the best with me. You know, to date, I really understood his play. And yeah, we had good players like Tabby. We had other ranking, the onboarding. We had some very good players, and for the budget that we had at the time, and for what we did, is incredible. So at my time at Brentford, I really enjoyed it.
If I'm not mistaken, I think you two had a recent interview hosted by Brentford.
Yes,
I saw that on YouTube. That was really funny.
Thank you. I've not seen him for 14 years, so and we used to be very close. It was good to see him again. Yeah, so the club did it for us to meet again for after 14 years. It was it was really really good. Really good. It's on my Instagram as well.
You know, Michael Turner is such a gentle guy, and I'm not saying you're not gentle, but it's like you're on the opposite side. How were you able to put all of your differences together and form such a great partnership on and off the field?
Yeah, because I was like quick. I could, you know, I was more of the tackler. He was more of picking the ball. You know, we understood that really well. You know, he's a quiet guy, but on the pitch he's very strong. People didn't know how strong he was, and I knew exactly how strong he was. You know, we both compliment ourselves because that was really harsh on strikers. So regardless, strikers didn't want to play against us because of me. But it shows to you that we both were good players, but we went on to play in the Premier League. I played my country. He nearly broke into the English team. He's got a good career as well. So yeah, but we're both opposite. So but it's good to have someone that really understands you. And he just stood out of my way, was a good friend off the pitch. You know, we used to drive together to training. We used to hang around off the pitch, so we were very close.
Okay, talk us through the match day experience. How was it like? The pubs, the fans, the chants, match day build up. Just tell us what goes into your mind before a big game starts.
I've played football all my life, so it was like normal, like what you're doing at your job. It was like a normal job for me. I really didn't have anything that would make me scared. It was me. The only thing I would say to you, every footballer has it. The little butterfly in your belly, you need that to be able to give your best. So everyone had it. But the minute the first person goes, that little butterfly flies away and we do all want to play. So, yeah, the fans, I was a big game player. I loved it when we played the big teams, the big games, the FA Cup, you know, the Wembley, the playoffs. Those are the games I like playing because I love the big games. When I had the chance to play, I just took it on my stride and just played well. The crowd didn't really get into me. I came from a very tough upbringing worry. So there's nothing, you know, in the world that you go to that you'd be scared. So yeah, football was just a normal, my tea and butter for me.
When you got called up to play for the Super Eagles of Nigeria, it was in a game against Romania, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct, you're correct.
Yeah, and your manager at the time, Martin Allen, I heard you speak about him. You said he drove you to the airport. What was your relationship with this guy?
He gave me the chance. I was at the Marge, non-league team, and I played against him, so he really believed in me. And even when I signed for Brentford, I didn't even know that I was 6-game banned. I was banned for 6 games. So I didn't play the first 6 games.
But, how did you join the team and not knowing you were banned?
I got booked in the last game of the season at Marge, and I've already accumulated lots of bookings before. So I was banned for the first 6 games, and they didn't know. So when they found out, it was like, wow. So I had to wait for 6 games to make my debut. But after 6 games, he believed in me, and he put me right in, and that was where it all started. When I got invited for Nigeria, he was so proud, so pleased. He came to the training ground, called everyone, and said, guess who got invited? Sam Soldier got invited for Nigeria. You know, so it was a great time. He drove me to the airport. You know, I went on the trip. Even though we lost 3-0, it was a great experience. I had a good game, and that was where it all started. And, Matt Allen was like, you know, he gave me the chance, and he was really a good guy to me. He got into my head, and I rate him a lot.
You made 4 appearances for Nigerian national team. Is there anything you wish had happened differently?
My record playing for Nigeria doesn't really reflect my ability. I was always injured. I got invited more than 20 times. Most times I was injured my knee. Yeah, my knee he made me play. So most times I'll get invited. On the last day, I'll pull out. The few games I played tell you how good I was. You know, my ability was, if I wasn't injured, I definitely would have clocked, you know, lots of caps. And that's my only regret. As much as people know me now, I don't think the Nigerian fans watched me play. You know, maybe you guys watched me play in my club side. But I don't think I went to a tournament or a World Cup to really show Nigerians what I could do. And I think I feel sorry for them because they missed out on what kind of ability I had. You know, I'm not just being, I'm not bigger than myself, but he is what he is. I was that good. I got invited more than 20 times, you know, but I just couldn't go. The few times I went to Nigeria, I had great games, and you could tell if I wasn't injured that much, I would have been top player playing for Nigeria.
Yeah, I hear you. I totally agree with that. There was, I think this could as well be your highlight. I'm just guessing it's your highlight. The game against France, Nigeria defeated France. I think 1-0. Joseph Akpala scored in that goal. You were involved in that game. And everyone at home was like, everyone was buzzing for that team. We could have kept that team together. But then it wasn't to be for us. What happened in that game? We defeated France at that time against all odds, went all the way to France. Did you feel like if we had kept that squad together, could we have gone? Because it was in 2009, just heading into the World Cup.
Yeah.
If we had kept that team together, did you feel like we might have had a better performance at the World Cup?
Definitely. But it would have been very hard to keep that team because you had the Yobos of the team. The Yobos didn't play. And you had some well-known name. That didn't play, but you know, on paper, they were the first time players. So, but ability wise, I knew I was on a different level, not being big headed, but it is what it was at the time. And that
you totally spot on.
Yeah, that's when you're from. We knew anyway. In camp, when I was in camp, they knew that, you know, Sam is on that level ability wise, you know. And that was why when I broke into the national team, it took me a week or 2 weeks to become a top player, a senior player, because my ability was up there. So I didn't really go into the national team as a young player. I went straight into being a big boy in the team because of my ability. But yeah, to keep the team was always going to be hard because some players were missing. But I thought they were going to at least keep a bunch of those players to make up for it. But it wasn't meant to be. The football we played at France that day was breathtaking. It was unbelievable. It had the full squad of France team playing as well. And it was just
called Thierry Henry was involved in that game.
Everyone
I remember vividly.
Everyone played. Yeah. Anelka, everyone. Yeah. Ribery, Malouda, Benzema, all of them. Yeah. Everyone was playing. Yeah. You know, was left back. Everyone
Patrice
was playing.
Evra. Yeah.
Evra, them lot. Mm. But you know, we had a good game and we played them out of the, of the park. We were really good. And I took on a stride. It wasn't like I was not on my space. It was a normal day for me. And the only regret I have is I got my injury, you know, early. I had to manage myself all through. And I couldn't play three games on the bounce. And that was what affected me playing for Nigeria that much. But ability-wise, you know, I was really blessed. I'm proud of that.
You know, you got your first call-up a tad bit later than you might have wanted. Was there a point in time when you felt like frustrated for being overlooked by the managers?
No. I thought if I was always fit, yeah, they had no choice but to call me. But you know the politics in Nigeria. There's always politics. Sometimes when you come to camp and you're that good, even the players work against you not to come back. Because, you know, so we know how the national team is. But at the same time, I don't think I was looked over, but I just thought if I was fit and playing for my football club, they had no choice but to call me. I'm happy for my career. You know, I got injured going from Brentford to Reading, the Premier League club. And that was years ago. And, you know, the doctor said to me I was going to retire after 2 years. I went on to play for 8 years. So the only regret is that I didn't really show the Nigerian fans how good I was, you know, playing. Most people that know me now watch me play in my football club. And, no, I was that good.
I like your energy, man.
Thank you.
Basel, you were going to say something.
Yeah, so going back to your Brentford days or your English career days, what was your most proud moment back then?
I think when I first signed a professional football club, which is Brentford. Mm-hmm. After Brentford, everything else was like normal to me. I thought I should go to Barcelona. but the first one was when I first signed a professional contract. I said to myself, I remember going there with my agent, and when my agent was talking about the money in the office, I went out to the stadium and I said to myself, this is where I want to test myself of how good I was really, because non-league, I was really too good for the non-league. So when I got the chance to be able to play in a professional league, League One, I wanted to test myself. I was really proud of the way I took it on the next 2 seasons and became, you know, I go into the players' team of the year every year. You know, best player in the club had to move to Reading. So to answer your question,
you've had high expectations. That's really good.
Very, very. You know, I came from Nigeria. When I came, I've always started playing for the under-20s in Nigeria. So I came as an international. Even though things didn't go well in the UK, I had to go down to the non-league. So I always knew that I want to be in the Premier League.
Fair enough.
You know, I'm just going to return to the Super Eagles right now.
Yes.
The current team has played a couple games right there in your state of origin, Delta State, Nigeria.
Yeah.
So I suppose you've had the chance to see them firsthand, especially because you mentioned in the last episode that you work closely with the Delta State FA. There's some serious talent coming through right now. Victor Osimhen has just signed for Napoli. But then I'm not sure we could say exactly the same for our defensive part. But then let's just look at the attack right now. We have a lot of them coming through, lots of them playing across Europe. Victor Osimhen right now is the biggest name. He's been trending on Twitter for a minute. Did you feel like he made the right choice to join Napoli right now, considering they're not playing in the Champions League?
Oh, definitely. I'm not in his head, and I think he knows where his career want to go. And the one thing I'm happy about is going to a football club that he will play. So regardless of the price tag, I think the young man that will take it on his stride and do well. I've watched him train. I've watched him play games. I think he's got a hat trick for the under 23 at Delta State. Yeah. So I've watched him play firsthand. I know how good he is. You know, not just a good puncher. He works hard for his team and he runs. He fights. Like, he's got a good first touch. You know, he holds the line really well. Hardly gets offside. I rate him for a young lad, but you know, right now the next level is when I hope he gets his first goal really quick and he just goes from there. But talking about his ability, you know, the money is nothing. I think he will go on and become a very good player.
I agree. There's been a bit of an argument going on between Nigerian football fans because a guy who I find very similar to yourself, Tammy Abraham, because he's from Warri as well, has the London connection, Greenwich and all of that. Which of them would you rather play if you're a manager right now? Put yourself in Gennaro Gross' shoes, and if Victor Osimhen was playing for you and Tammy Abraham had agreed to play for Nigeria. Obviously, he's playing for the Three Lions. That's not going to happen. But then I'm just trying to pick your brains on this one. Which of them would you rather have as your number nine?
Because I've watched Osimhen train and play, and don't forget, he grew up in Nigeria. There's a style, there's a way of playing African football, Super Eagles for playing. You know, I remember when some English boys would come from England. What's his name? The ex Everton player, the big one, when he first came.
Anichebe.
When he first came, you know, African football is different from the way it's being played anywhere else. And apart from that, international football is different as well. So to answer your question, I would pick Osimhen, and not because he just signed a 70 million contract, more because I've seen him play. He's got the swag of an African player, and you have to have that to be able to play for the national team. So, you know, there's no need of me talking about who's better, because one's a Nigerian player, so I would say a Nigerian player is better. So I would go for his teammate to pick him.
And he also seems passionate about playing for the Nigerian national team, so that's a plus.
Yeah. If you grew up in Nigeria, like I had the chance to play for England myself. I had the chance to, when I was really doing well at Brentford, I was going to sign for a Premier League club. But when you grew up in Nigeria, you know, regardless of who you play for, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Man United, Napoli, when you wear the green and white shirt, it's different. Trust me, you want to play for Nigeria. The fans, the support is different from what you get in your football club. So he was passionate. Every player is passionate to play for the country.
Taking you to the hottest topic of our episode, which is the match-fixing scandal that you had. Talk us about what happened and just shed some lights.
It's not a hot topic. It's what comes with the game, you know. I'm not going to dwell on it because it happened years and years ago, so I've moved on. But I'll just give you a new example. There was a tip that came out about match fixing that said that Sam Sturridge was match fixing and someone else was in the video, but it was blurred out. And in that tape, I was the criminal who was doing the match fixing. But at the end of the day, one individual in that team went to prison, one didn't go to prison. So that just answered your case. So so there's no need of me going on about it. So there's no way one person in the camera is a criminal and did match fixing, then the other one goes to prison. It doesn't work that way. And don't forget, we're dealing with the English media. So there's no way if it happened, I will not be going to prison and he will be going to prison. So
you just mentioned dealing with the English media. Do you feel like racism had a part to play in all of this episode?
Oh, big time. What happened in court as well, like if my name was John Smith, I wouldn't be there. You know, if my name was John Smith, you know, so but we're big and ugly enough to take it. It comes with the game. Don't even feel, you know, somehow to ask the question. I love people asking me because it makes me laugh because I'll be able to tell you what I just said just now. Someone went to prison for it. You understand? Yeah. And there's no way a young black individual does that kind of crime and don't go to prison. You know? So me not going to prison for it and someone going to prison for that, it shows you what happened. And I would say every day, you know, there should be smoke. If someone is doing something, there should be smoke for you to go after him. they couldn't prove the smoke. It was a setup, and it was proven that I was being set up, and it wasn't just me. It was really wide. If you know about Mazi Mahmood, the guy in question, you go and read about him, you will know about the story. So the only one thing I would say, African like yourself, African media, I would tell them, listen, we fight against racism in this country. So as press people, when you hear something, make sure you go and ask. Don't just do copy and paste. But when you do copy and paste, you're killing one of yours. Yeah?
Right.
Because most people did copy and paste. And what happened? I was found not guilty. I won the case. Mm. So the African press has to understand this. Yeah? Mm. Don't, when you hear something like this, you should understand that you've got young black Nigerian boy in England making good things, you know, got good charity, got good things going on. They will want to bring you down 100%. So all we have is you guys. If I do something wrong, yes, go and publish it, but make sure you it's coming from you, your investigation. Don't just do copy and paste what these people say, and it has worked out better for me, because I am so happy. So be comfortable to ask me about it. It's okay, because I am very comfortable to answer it.
Sam just dropping some gems, man. Everyone listening,
yeah,
it's very, very important. Don't just copy and paste. I mean, we're not even mainstream, Bass. We're not mainstream. We're just friends just having fun doing this, and we just like to go in and find out what the story actually is, man.
True.
Yeah, I like to look at, when I look at England, I look at them like a country that's a modern country, and it just saddens me to hear that it's still very, very existent even up until now.
Exactly. We're happy. I'm sure
you can. People like Marcus Rashford, Raheem Sterling speaking out right now. How do you feel like just looking at this modern wave of footballers trying to have their voice heard? Marcus Rashford, even he had the UK government making a U-turn on a decision not to feed vulnerable kids at the point when coronavirus was hitting up in the UK. How do you feel just looking at this modern wave of footballers having their voice heard and having such a big influence?
Yeah, it's great, and it's great that they're all coming together. But at the same time, we need role models. We need to see someone that looks like us up there making decisions. We can say whatever we want to say now. We've not got anyone up there, a black individual who is like a leader, who is like an administrator, who's running a club to look up to. So are you telling me we've got millions of black players who are great around the world? There's not one black player that's a manager for a big club around the world. Are you kidding me?
So
think about it. So think about it. So you're telling me we've got best players. You see me just went for how much now? For years and years, there's no one black player that is good enough to manage the club. Is that what you're saying? So let's not talk about racism, about England. You're telling me there's no individual black player that can manage, or let's forget manager now, that can be a staff, in a Premiership club. Yes,
even the referees, I'm not sure there is a black referee in England.
So what we guys keep talking about it, they're just making you feel, okay, yes, let's talk about it. Go to bed. That's what they're doing, you know? So what the Stanleys and the Rashford are doing, good for them. Good for the world of football. But this has been happening for a long time. It's been happening for a long time. Why can't we have... I play for so many clubs. I play for like 12 clubs in the UK. Not once you say like a black official. Not even the manager. Just like a physio or something. A black person in the backroom staff. What's that about?
Actually, at the top of my head, I just thought about Thierry Henry in Monaco. That's one option. And then Patrick Vieira in MLS.
Yeah, so you're telling me 10 billion black players, those are the only players that can make you
great.
That's
true.
I'll tell you a new story. I won't call a name, but I've got this old teammate, great player, who went to do a coaching course with Sonny Olise. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And he came to me and said, "Sarge, Sonny Olise is one of the smartest person I've ever met in my life. He came first in the coaching course. He was that good." Yeah? I won't mention his name. But can you believe this second player has got a football club he managed? Sonny Olise is nowhere. He doesn't even have the chance. Okay, let's flip it now. The problem is even Africa. We don't even have a chance in Africa. That's how much they've really smashed us. Like, you know,
because even if you look at the national teams across Africa, it's all of them foreign coaches. Most of them.
Maybe only Senegal is the only,
and you know the funny thing about this whole stuff, when we went to the World Cup, all the African teams got knocked out. Like, we didn't even have a great showing. The Senegalese team, who had an African coach, even though they didn't make it past the first round, they made a great impression of themselves. They only missed out
and they also played a very good
fair play rule.
AFCON.
I will take you back to your question about the national team, about the defenders. Yeah, I can tell you off my head now in 2 seconds. Yeah, why we still have a problem defending in Africa. When you come Europe, black players are always keen on losing concentration. That's normal because we've got pace, because we're strong. Yeah, we always lose concentration because our pace help us out. Yeah, because we're very fast, we're very quick. So the white players probably don't have that pace, so they concentrate more. So tell me, how do you help your players in Africa or in Nigeria? You give them a defensive coach.
That's right.
So you're talking about me now, how good I became. How did that become that good? It's not a manager. I had a defensive coach who coached me how to defend properly. So to tell you something, individually, we've got some great defenders. But because we cannot defend as a team, yeah, do you know what defending is? Where to step up? You know, the signs of where to go down, where to stand on your feet, how to keep the line. There's a lot of things.
Yeah.
What part of the pitch do you show him inside? What part of the pitch do you show him outside? How do you, box the player so he goes on his wrong foot? There's so much details into defending. Yeah, that you need a defensive coach. So you're telling me we've got Roy, the manager. Do you tell me a white guy doesn't know that? He doesn't know that his team is a defensive coach. Okay, now they got Joseph Yobo there. Yeah, are they gonna allow Joseph Yobo coach the players how to defend? Because
they brought Joseph Yobo in and say he's assistant manager. That caused a bit of a stir around the country. Some people were like, "Oh, he doesn't have his coaching badges done, blah blah blah." Like, there was so much noise, so much negativity around it.
Yeah, I heard him speak a couple of days ago, and I was really pleased with he spoke. He's a good mate of mine. I'm not saying this because he's a good mate, but I hope he goes in there and does the job. When it comes to coaching badges, yes, he needs the coaching badges because I've got mine. Yeah, I've got my level 1, level 2, going to my B license, so I know the difference. So you might be very knowledgeable about the game, but how do you pass your message to the players? So I get that. But when it comes to experience of defending or playing the game, you cannot beat Joseph Yobo. He has played the game to the highest level. He knows these things off his head. Yes, he might not be able to transfer his knowledge at the moment the perfect way, which he will do. But when it comes to the game understanding, you cannot even talk near Joseph Yobo because he knows his football. All I'm saying, I've always said it, I know what you need as a national team is a proper defensive coach. If not, you are not going to go anywhere in a big stage because your defense will always lay you down.
To be honest, after what we heard from you right now, if I was working in the Nigerian FA, I would hire you as the national team. That was some strong words, really.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're doing right now.
There's a lot of politics in our football.
Yeah, don't forget I played for 12 clubs. I played for one of the best, you might not even know him, one of the best coach ever. Best defense coach ever. I think he's now in MK Dons. His name is Wally Downs. Listen, I came from Africa. I was raw. I was quick. I was strong. But I worked under 2 good defensive coaches that taught me how to put your foot for clearance. So you never score your own goal. You try your the way you play. You hardly score on goal from a clearance because you don't swing. There's so many details in defending. There's so much details in defending. You know, how to show the man the wrong foot when he's coming close to the goal. There's so many. So I would definitely be a great defensive coach, but I'm not looking for a job. I'm just saying, you're giving a guy, you're paying a guy so much money to coach the national team. He should know this.
You know, Sam, a few months ago, or should I say like a year ago, there was talk about Gennaro being sent by the Nigerian FA abroad to get a coaching course. I found that really absurd. for someone who's not even young anymore, because if we are looking at the future of our football,
yeah,
we obviously know it could take us the left. We need someone who takes 5 years, 10 years back.
Yeah.
But Gennaro obviously is not the guy to do that. How do you find the decision by the Nigerian FA to send him on a coaching course? Meanwhile, we're getting Joseph Yobo, whom was employed. He was employed, but Nigerians are not him having a coaching course or not. Why not Joseph Yobo and why Gennaro?
Are you going to blame Gennaro? You got people making these decisions. So it's not his fault. It's the people making the decisions. But let me tell you something about Gennaro. I have not, you know, spoke to him one-on-one. I've met him a few times. But there's something he did that, you know, I have to respect him. There was a time he had to make a change because, you know, he was talked to about the change and he listened. Yeah, he probably didn't listen to what they said, but he did listen. And you cannot be that kind of guy that listens. You know, there's some managers that comes and think he knows everything. So I think when he did that, I had much respect for him. Because as a manager, you should be able to be flexible when things are going wrong. So I think he's got that. And I had a lot of respect for that. So I'm not trying to say because it's white or because it's black. I'm just saying, if he's the right man to do it, let him do it. Someone like myself, if I go to training and go to the dressing room with him, I will tell you straight up, this guy is not fit enough to manage us. But you got people that goes in there that doesn't even know a good coach. So we've got no chance. I will be in that dressing room and hear him talk or be in his training session. I will tell you if this guy is fit enough to take us to the next level. But at the same time, I have to say I've got respect for him because he made a mistake at the World Cup. And
I was going to talk about that, man, in the game against Argentina. Man, I was fuming that night.
That was a big mistake.
Howla.
Because at the end of the day, and I blame the players as well. You know, match maintenance. There's something you call, you know, you have to maintain the game. You know,
we
had the game in our hands. It's ridiculous. And I think the bench lost on that game. We lost on the bench. He didn't do it properly. But he then came back to Nigeria.
And it takes us all the way back to the thing you said about defending, man.
It is. Listen, I've told you now, when you watch games in England or in Spain, listen to what I told you, and watch the way they play. Listen, nobody keeps offside these days. Nobody keeps offside. But we know how to hold the line. That when the ball's being played through, you are offside. We're not keeping offside. But we know when the player is face down, you push up. When it's face up, you hold. When it's coming forward, you drop. It's simple. You need someone to coach these players. And let me tell you, we've got good defenders in Nigeria. Don't get me wrong. They're quick. They're strong, they can jump, they can head. So we've got good defenders. So when you put a coach to manage these players, you will get great players. The West, we're lucky enough to have them that time. We've never had a defensive coach. I'm coming from a point saying to you, defensive coach makes a big difference. You just talked to me about Michael Turner. Me and Michael Turner have never one day sat down and said, oh, go right, go left. No. But because we are coached by the same defensive coach, I know what he's doing. I know when the ball goes backwards, we're taking 2 steps forward. So when the ball goes behind us, the man's offside because we're taking 2 steps forward. There's so many details into defending. You know what I mean? So when people talk about the Van Dijk, the Roy Ferdinand, there's a reason they are as good as they are. I was that good. I came through a very good defensive coach. When I was in London, I had John Terry in London. I had Roy Ferdinand. I was up there with the best defenders in London at the time. Mm-hmm. Because you've been coached with good coaches that knows how to defend. I will keep saying it. The Amateur Jews, whoever they are, they don't know football. They are just marketers. No disrespect to them. They're marketers. But when it comes to technical side of football, they should give people that knows the game. But that's my point.
Yeah. Do you think former footballers should have more role in national teams?
Not all of them. Not all of them, because not everyone that plays the game knows the game. Some of them are very
the more experienced players.
The experienced ones, the educated ones. Definitely, 100%. Do you know what a player is going through? Have you ever been with a player that his wife just got a baby? His wife just had a baby. Do you know?
Mm-hmm.
I got dropped because my wife just had a baby. Mm-hmm. And that makes you know I'm not sleeping well. You know, there's something going on in my mind. So it doesn't make me a bad player. But when you're an official, a player, why just had a baby, you know that. You know the problem, why he's been like this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand? So yeah. there's a lot of things that comes into why being an ex-international or being an ex-player benefits you to be a very better manager. But you have to educate yourself. You have to go and do the coaching. You have to make sure you're a very good coach. Not everyone is a good coach. I don't want to be a manager. I am very good in this whole defensive coach because I took down details when I was playing about defending. And that's what I am. But yeah, lots of ex-players should be involved because they have more experience.
Yeah, true. I think we have a lot of similarities when it comes to this issue between the Nigerian football and the Saudi Arabian. We as well, we don't take advantage of our former players. We pay a lot of salary for foreign managers who just come in here and they just indulge themselves and they just go, finish their contract and they just go without any end product. So I really agree with what you just said, and I hope that maybe in the future former players, the players that had big experience, big history with their national teams, they should be more involved in picking up young talent and in arranging the national team. I do agree with that.
Actually, in Nigeria right now, we have a very good number of coaches doing well for themselves. I don't know what Daniel Amokachi is up to right now, but he was doing very well, I think, in Finland at one point. We have another manager who's just qualified his team into playing in the UEFA Champions League qualifiers. I do hope he qualifies. I cannot remember his name right now, but that's a Nigerian doing well for himself as well. Won the league, I think, in Finland as well. Mm-hmm. Did you mention his name? Did you just mention his name?
Yeah, the keeper, Igbo. Is it Igbo?
Yeah, Igbo. He's a great guy, doing well. So.
I'll tell you something that people might not want to agree with. You know, the hunger in Nigeria, when you've not got life after sport, you know, you're not doing well, you then succumb to the system. And that's why not every ex-player, regardless of the name, the big name in Nigeria, is good for the players, because they succumb to the system. And that's our problem, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. Like, there's a whole lot wrong with our football right now, but then so much talent still. Sometimes it baffles me to look at how much talent we have and we're not able to reflect it. And I think this conversation has helped us open up a bit about how badly we defend, especially at World Cups.
Yeah.
But we're looking at the Super Eagles right now. We talked about one attacker, Victor Osimhen, doing well. A lot of them doing well. But we cannot exactly say the same about defenders. But then just you as a Super Eagles observer, I'm not going to call you a fan right now. For someone like you observing with all of your experience and that Super Eagles setup, is there any defender whom you feel like could go on and have a great future? I have one in my mind right now, but I just want to hear what you think.
100%. What's his name? The guy that just got relegated from, he shares the same club with Omeru. What's his name?
Wazim,
yeah, him. Him is a good player. I've watched him play live. I think he's a very good player.
Played right back at AFCON.
I watched him play for the under 23 in Asaba, and he played the centre half. And I've watched him play for his football club. He's got the attributes of becoming a very good player. But I'm telling you, we have over 100 players, defenders, that's got that. Yeah. The difference is if he gets coached. You see, people talk about Van Dijk, like, oh, what? He's not that good. I'm telling you, when you know how to defend and you watch Van Dijk defend, you will know he's probably up there with the best. When you watch Ramos defend, he can be rash sometimes, but when you see things they do, when they shoot people outside and tackle at last gap, you think it's just, he just tackled. No, he showed him, he put him in the position where he could tackle. So say for example, I'll give you an example, say a right winger sitting on the left side, and it's coming inside. You have to obviously show him outside, so he goes on the left foot.
That's true.
Yeah. So when he pushes the ball, when he shoots, you will get the tackle, but it won't be as good as his right foot. So people there think, why
there are some players that are very difficult to stop at this particular position. Aaron Robin comes to mind as one.
I'll tell you about Aaron Robin. Nobody will blame you. Let me explain to you. Your defensive coach will not blame you. Yeah. if you do the right thing, even though he gets away, because he's a good player.
Yeah.
But you have to do the right thing. So say for sure. Aaron Ben, for Ruben, for example, if he's playing against me, what I would do, if he's coming from his right side, trying to go in, I would obviously show him outside. Like, mm-hmm. I will, like, obviously. So he has to go outside. Yeah? If he goes outside and smash the top corner, defensive coach will not blame you.
Yeah, because you made the right approach.
You made the right approach, and yeah. The percentage of him scoring is less.
But to be honest, for someone like Aaron Robin, he's always going to score. This guy has a crazy left foot.
but no. You're talking from a fan point of view. Defender's point of view, yeah. Listen, you've all watched him score. Not every time. He scored. You can't tell me he scored every game.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? So there's some games where the defenders have got better of him.
That's true.
Listen, on a good day, the world class defender, yeah, on a good day, an average striker is better. You know why? I'll tell you. Mm-hmm. When we're playing as defenders, we make sure that we play to our best. A striker doesn't need that. A striker just needs a goal.
Right.
So we need to be 100% every game. A striker don't have to be 100%. The minute he scores a goal, at the end of the game, he's the one they're interviewing.
And it's kind of unfair, really, for defenders.
It's unfair.
Because, the moment you make a mistake as a defender, it won't be forgotten for the whole season. But for the striker, if he misses a big chance or something, it will be just for that game. People will talk about it just for
the next game. Everyone forgets it.
Yeah, and then everyone forgets it. But if someone like a defender or a goalkeeper does the same thing, it won't be forgotten. Let's take Karius, for example. Okay, maybe Karius is the big one because he made this mistake in a... But just as a general rule, the way football is right now, it's very unfair for defenders and goalkeepers when it's not the same for strikers. And also strikers get more recognition, unlike defenders. Maybe Van Dijk
But we're fine, though. We're fine.
Sam, do you feel like the defensive position is like the most difficult one to play on the football pitch?
Because of the way the judgmental part of football, being a striker is hard because, you know, they don't care how well you do. if you don't score, they just they don't care. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As a defender, you just have to have a decent game. You don't have to 10. As long as you're 8, 8, 8, 8, 7, 8, you're fine. As a striker, you need to score. It doesn't matter whether you can chase the ball, you need to put the ball at the back of the net. So I would say the pressure is really striking. But as a game, and that's why Nigeria will always struggle, to win anything, you need a decent defense. With a decent defense, Italy did it in 2006. With a decent defense, you're halfway there to winning something. So all you need is a cord, a good midfielder, then a striker like Mano Iwobi that just score goals. Yeah, I'm telling you, you will win the World Cup.
So defenses win you titles.
Yeah, that's true.
They win you titles. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
They win you titles. You know, them days are gone where score 4, score 5. Them days are gone.
And that's evident in Liverpool. Before Van Dijk and after Van Dijk. Before Van Dijk, they would score goals.
Yeah.
But they won't win any titles because their defense was not up to standard. But now it's different. Yeah. So I agree.
You know, I can go on and on because I'm passionate about the game. I'm a very good student.
It's evident.
Yeah, so
of course, Sam. We do appreciate how passionate you are about the game. I spoke to you the other time. You said you were still at the gym, and I said something, man. I only hope to have as much enthusiasm as you have at that age. When I get to that age, man, you're a role model to a lot of us out here, not just in football, but in life in general. Thank you very much, man, for joining us.
After what we just heard from you, we should start a campaign for you to start coaching.
Exactly, man.
We should launch a Twitter hashtag right now.
Thank you very much. The next task.
Yeah, someone with the vast knowledge of football that as someone like you, we should take advantage of that.
It's frustrating that, you know, we can't have the chance to give back. But I'm happy to talk to you guys and share my story.
Likewise, man.
You know, the pleasure. The pleasure.
One day when we come to the UK, we'll come hang out with you.
You have to. You have to. Yeah. I'll pick up the airport. I'll show you the room. You will love it.
Yeah. I can't wait, man. All right, that's a wrap, guys. A big appreciation to man like Sam Soje for making this possible. We've been Mubam Bass, and he's been Sam Soje, and we are over and out.
So we need to be 100% every game. A striker don't have to be 100%. Jimmy just scores a goal. At the end of the game, he's the one they're interviewing.
And it's kind of unfair, really, for defenders.
It's unfair. Because,
yeah, the moment you make a mistake as a defender, it won't be forgotten for the whole season. But for the striker, if he misses a big chance or something, it will be just for that game. People will talk about it just for
the game. Score a hat-trick, everyone forgets it.
Yeah, and then everyone forgets it. But if someone like a defender or a goalkeeper does the same thing, it won't be forgotten. Let's take Karius, for example. Okay, maybe Karius is the big one because he made this mistake in a... But just as a general rule, the way football is right now, it's very unfair for defenders and goalkeepers when it's not the same for strikers. And also strikers get more recognition, unlike defenders. Maybe Van Dijk
But we're fine, though. We're fine.
Sam, do you feel like the defensive position is like the most difficult one to play on the football pitch?
Because of the way the judgmental art of football, being a striker is hard because, you know, they don't care how well you do. If you don't score, they don't care. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As a defender, you just have to have a different game. You don't have to 10. As long as you're 8, 8, 8, 8, 7, 8, you're fine. As a striker, you need to score. It doesn't matter whether you can chase the ball, you need to put the ball at the back of the net. So I would say the pressure is with the strikers. But as a game, and that's why Nigeria will always struggle, to win anything, you need a decent defense. With a decent defense, Italy won it, did it in 2006. With a decent defense, you're halfway there to winning something. So all you need, the cord, a good midfielder, then a striker that might not be a Yekini that just score goals. Yeah, I'm telling you, you will win the World Cup.
So defense is win you titles.
Yeah, that's true.
They win you titles. I'm sorry. They win you titles. You know, them days are gone where score 4 or score 5. Them days are gone.
And that's evident in Liverpool. That before Van Dijk and after Van Dijk, before Van Dijk, they would score goals.
Yeah.
But they won't win any titles because their defense was not up to standard. But now it's different. Yeah. So I agree.
You know, I can go on and on because I'm passionate about the game. I'm a very good student.
Very
of the game.
Yeah, it's evident.
Yeah, so
of course, Sam. We do appreciate how passionate you are about the game. I spoke to you the other time. You said you were still at the gym, and I said something, man. I can only hope to have as much enthusiasm as you have at that age. When I get to that age, man, you're a role model to a lot of us out here, not just in football, but in life in general. Thank you very much, man, for joining us.
After what we just heard from you, we should start a campaign for you to start coaching.
Exactly.
We should launch a Twitter hashtag right now.
Thank you very much. The next task.
Yeah, someone with the vast knowledge of football that as someone like you, we should take advantage of that.
It's frustrating that, you know, we can't have the chance to give back, but I'm happy to talk to you guys and share my story.
Likewise,
you know, the pleasure.
One day when we come to the UK, we'll come hang out.
You have to. Yeah. I'll pick up the airport. I'll show you the room. You will love it.
Yeah.
I can't wait, man. All right, that's a wrap, guys. A big appreciation to man like Sam Soje for making this possible. We've been Mubam Bass, and he's been Sam Soje, and we are over and out.